Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome inside the Celtics Lab podcast. I'm Justin Quinn here with Alex Goldberg and Cam Tabatabai above the glass and Celtics Hub, respectively, along with a few special guests recording just moments from the start of the 2021 NBA season. We've invited Nick Fryer, editor of our sister site NetsWire, and Jack Manuel of the Off the Glass pod, Brooklyn Buzz, or is it Bounce?
It's Buzz, my dude. Awesome.
We're going to talk all things Nets Celtics ahead of the two teams' Christmas Day game and much, much more. How's everyone doing?
Bloody good. Bloody good.
Ready for the season.
I'm doing great. I just had a wonderful little mini vacation, so I'm feeling good.
Must be nice. Yes,
vacation? What's that?
Teacher life. It's great.
Pretty much. Anyone else here not a teacher? Nick, what do you do besides journalism? Anything?
No, that's all I do is write. That's it.
Nice. Sports machine. I like it. Everyone else here is a teacher. And since we, you're all here listening because you want to hear about teaching, I figured maybe we should talk about some news. The Celtics got smacked in the preseason games. How worried are we?
Not particularly. It's fun to put stock in preseason games, but with huge grains of salt, maybe bigger than even a grain can qualify as being. The Celtics are fielding 8 first or second year players. They're just an inexperienced bunch. So I don't really feel the need for them to put the pedal to the metal. There's a lot of kinks to iron out, and a coach like Brad Stevens is the person for the job. So let's revisit that question in February. For now, not particularly worried.
Yeah, I think that's on the money, Cam. Brad Stevens has typically used preseason games to just kind of tinker and throw stuff out there. We got a whole lot of Peyton Pritchard. We got a whole lot of Aaron Nesmith and Carson Edwards. Javonte Green was starting. I'm not necessarily sure that the Celtics are going to be doing that opening night. I don't think there's really too much you can take away from this team in preseason. If there is one thing, it's that the shooting did not look great with the starters on the floor, but ultimately I think we just got to wait and see.
I wouldn't feel great about the Celtics right now, personally. I mean, without Kemba right now, I'm going into the season and it's a 2-team race. And now after what I've seen from the Sixers and how they've rebuilt things, I think they've passed the Celtics right now. I think the Heat are the number 3 team just out of respect. Fine if you want to put them as the 4, but I think it's a two-team race in the Eastern Conference right now, and even more so after what I saw in the preseason.
Yeah, I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle. I think that, you know, if we can't look into preseason games, then as a Brooklyn Nets fan, what am I doing? Kevin Durant, the best player in the world right now? Nah. Look, in all honesty, you know, the defense, the offense looked a little bit sluggish, but I think that's going to happen when the experimentation from Brad Stevens in the way that he's using this preseason, it makes a lot of sense. But if that trend continues, you know, obviously, when the games start to matter, that's when you start worrying. I think the depth is still going to be an issue. And obviously, Kemba's health, you know, when's Tristan Thompson going to be back? You know, as long as there's like at least an 8 or 9 man rotation and there aren't too many first or second year players playing meaningful minutes, but unfortunately, that's probably going to have to be the case. And there are a couple of guys there that could pop. And I think with Brad Stevens' level of expertise, I think he's going to get one or two of them to pop off.
So how are we feeling about the Milwaukee Bucks, another top team in the East, getting penalized with a second round pick for the whole Bogdanovich, however you say his last name, tampering scenario? Was that too much?
I mean, they just lost a second round pick. If anything, it's just really embarrassing because you lost out on that. It's just a reminder that they lost out on him to the Hawks, who are at best going to be the 7th seed, maybe the 6th if the Pacers suck this year. That's about it.
Yeah, I just don't think this is very important at all to the Bucks. They made their big move in the offseason getting Jrue Holiday. They emptied out all of their picks to do it. This pick, if it even does convey, is going to be like the 60th pick or something. I don't think that the person who they would have drafted would even play very much. So this is a slap on the wrist, which has kind of been typical of Adam Silver and tampering violations for basically the entirety of his tenure in the NBA. And that's fine for the most part.
I do. My only issue with it is unless Milwaukee did something very flagrant that either hasn't been reported or I missed, it does feel like penalizing a small market team in a way that we know the Clippers and Lakers and everyone else are tampering left and right, and I haven't seen a penalty of this size. So I might be loud wrong about that, but it does
seem... How much
seem...
was Magic Johnson fined again? Was it like $50,000?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but that's not... That doesn't affect the on the court.
No, I agree.
That a second round pick necessarily does, but so I was a little surprised that it happened. I mean, again, tampering is kind of the way of the world in the NBA, but I don't think it's a meaningful penalty in the long run. I guess it's an asset that the Bucks couldn't use in a trade package, but otherwise.
Yeah, I think the thing that stuck out to me is that I'm not sure if I was reading it wrong or who was reporting it, but apparently that pick is going to be completely null and void and no team is going to be able to use it. I don't know what that means. And wouldn't you just give that to the next team up or they would get an extra? That confused me a little bit. It's something that I haven't seen since being a basketball fan. It's a bit just odd and strange.
If you're robbing some guy of an opportunity, yeah, maybe he's probably
going to be
a two-way player.
Next Isaiah Thomas, yeah.
Just give it to the Knicks. I mean, he'll probably play for them.
That's a good point.
We can all agree on the Knicks. Yeah. Well, there has also been a number of extensions. Some of them kind of, you know, expected. The Giannis Supermax, I think, is probably riding the line on that. We don't need to get into that right now. But were there any extensions that did surprise you?
Cam? I have an opinion here. The Luke Kennard thing is preposterous. I'm all for overpaying players so you have a movable contract, but 4 years of Luke Kennard, what is it, $64 million? That's just... Yep. I know that the cap is probably eventually going to go back up again, but I don't know. The Clippers have such a track record of overpaying players, and Kawhi hasn't committed to them long-term. That could be a weird contract very quickly, so...
Yeah, that would be really weird. The Fultz one was the one that surprised me the most, though.
Yeah, but that makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess so. Good for him and everything and turning around. It makes the Sixers look like idiots a little bit, too. Or just, I guess, Philly seems a lot more toxic because he couldn't thrive there. However you want to spin to make them look bad. But I was still stunned by that one. What did he get? Is it $50
million? Is that 50, right?
Yeah, 3 years, 50.
3 years, 50? I mean, look, the Kennard one is egregious, but that one was pretty shocking for me.
I don't know. I think on the one hand, Fultz has definitely had his struggles in the NBA so far and has not lived up to the promise of being a number one pick. On the other hand, he actually did tangibly develop into a better player last year in Orlando. And I think for a team that hardly ever gets big free agents, it's not the craziest risk to take. There's still some stuff to like about his game. The thing that surprised me a little more was the Jonathan Isaac $80 million deal. I think Jonathan Isaac at his peak could be a really good NBA player, but unfortunately this dude is getting injured every year seemingly. And I just think that's a really risky bet to commit that much money to a guy who just through no fault of his own can't stay on the court.
Yeah, I mean, there were those sort of issues with Kennard as well. You know, the Detroit Pistons gave up all those seconds to get rid of him. You know, do they know something that the Los Angeles Clippers don't? Are they hiding those medicals? I think it's hard to judge a lot of these rookie extensions, you know, in the moment. Like, it is, obviously, we have those hyperbolic sort of takes initially. But after a season, it's like, okay, well, Kennard's healthy now and he's a decent enough ball handler and he's a great shooter. That's all right. Markelle Fultz is never getting his jumper back. This is a bad deal. Jonathan Isaac is finally back and has some semblance of health. But, you know, a lot of the, like the Jonathan Isaac one could be unders if he comes back healthy, because he has an elite talent in terms of his impact defensively. There were some that I liked. I really liked the OG Anunoby deal. I think he's going to win Most Improved Player this year. I'm super in on that. And the Gobert deal, I think, was necessary if it's the Utah Jazz. But if it was another team, it's an overpay. You know, you've got to keep the guys and you've got to keep the asset, you know, not to reduce these players just down to assets. Even if it is a near supermax, closer than the normal max. I know that they were sort of toing and froing, and Gobert's like, I want the supermax. And the team's like, we'll give you the normal max. And Gobert basically gave up like, what, $20, $23 million. That's going to get you maybe like a $4, $5 million player, you know, a decent enough rotation piece. So that was good for Utah and certainly good for Gobert. But yeah, I think a lot of these are hard to judge initially because their potential pays. The majority of these rookie extensions are potential pays. And what are these guys going to be?
There were also a few players who did not get an extension. Lauri Markkanen, Lonzo Ball, John and Zach Collins, no relation. And one in particular I wanted to hear you Nets people talk about, the wisdom behind, that being Jared Allen.
Look, I think the lack of the Jared Allen extension was partly because of the poison pill contract and partly from Jared Allen's camp. He's going to get a lot more than probably what his market value is right now. You know, it's anywhere from the range of $10 to $15 million per season. You know, it would be unders if he were to get something like the Yusuf Nurkic deal, but it'd probably be overs if he were to get something like what Clint Capella got, you know, around that $18 to $19 million per annum. So I think if by the end of this season, you know, the Brooklyn Nets and Jared Allen is finally starting like he deserves to, and he's contributing in postseason basketball, and he continues to grow and flourish. Remember, the guy's 22 years old. He's the same age as freaking Obi Toppin is right now in his first season. He's going to continue to grow and flourish. I think he's going to be around the sort of $15 to $17 million range. But hopefully, you know, he's always been quite healthy as well. I think he deserves a deal. And if he took it, would have been awesome for the Brooklyn Nets in a lot of respects, similar to getting unders on like Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert in the past. But he's going to get a lot more money because he deserves it. He's a starting caliber center in this league. And starting caliber centers, you've got Miles Turner is probably the best comparison I can make, got 468. Jared Allen could get fringed at if he continues to grow and flourish.
Allen deserves to get paid 1,000%. I mean, look, he's not a three-point shooter. He's never going to be a three-point shooter. He's not going to help you stretch the floor at all, but he can do everything else. I'd like him, I'm sure Jack feel the same way, to put on a little bit of weight so he doesn't get bullied around like he has in the past. But outside of that, he brings you everything else that you need. And like, look, you'll get DeAndre Jordan. He's getting all those minutes. We know, and he started, we know why that's happening. Okay, fine, whatever. Accept it for what it is. He's not, you know, he's going to help. He's still a rebounding machine. But Allen deserves to get paid a lot more. And I think the Nets would be foolish to not match whatever offer sheet he gets in the offseason, because he's going to get a decent chunk of change. And any team that goes and somehow maybe they pull him away from Brooklyn, then great, you're getting another ad. But I think Brooklyn will match it. And we see with what's gone on with all the Harden chaos and everything, where Sean Marks has said you're not going to mortgage away your future and everything. I mean, everybody has a price that eventually they'll be willing to do it for. But I think Allen is one of those guys that he's looking at as part of your future, because when Durant and Kyrie are done, what's the next step? Who are the guys that are going to usher in that next era of Nets basketball? And the guys who are going to help continue that will be probably Dinwiddie, but definitely Caris LeVert and Jared Allen for sure.
Yeah, I think that's completely right, guys. And, you know, I think another reason to keep Jared Allen long-term is that Jared Allen could also eventually, if he plays his way into the contract that y'all are projecting him to play into, he's going to be involved potentially in a deal for a third star should that continue to be the pursuit for the Brooklyn Nets franchise. I think Allen, LeVert, those guys are all going to be valuable chips going forward. And if he continues to improve, if he gets a contract that becomes movable for an even better player, I see no reason why they wouldn't match.
There's so many universes where DeAndre Jordan declines and declines fast. There's a lot of universes where he plays a number of seasons at a high level and can stay on the court with Durant and Irving, but having that insurance policy, because Allen has far fewer NBA miles on those bones. So it's just, if the Nets are willing to pay and can make eight or nine guys comfortable with limited touches, that's such a boom for what is already a really dangerous team. Because, I mean, I'm a big DeAndre Jordan fan, and maybe not as much as Kyrie and Kevin Durant, but he is definitely the weak link in that friendship. And having Allen somewhere down the stretch, whether it's this spring or next year, able to step up, that would be huge for the Nets.
So you guys have been tiptoeing around another issue that unites these two teams that are already tied together by questionable trades. And this is, you know, a questionable trade for both teams that they're being tied to by various sources, one of which sees the Nets as a potential suitor for James Harden, but only reportedly from the Rockets camp, if they would include Kyrie Irving in the deal as a starting point. But
so I think in this sort of respect, I think the Brooklyn Kyrie Irving, it's all fluff. You know, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the thing that gets the deal done is the length and the amount of picks and the protections on them. And I don't think Sean Marks is going to be willing to mortgage the future that Billy King did for a lot of you guys and your team's fans did, you know, five, six, 7 years ago. So I don't want to do that again. But hey, it all ended up okay with both teams. It's a win-win deal. You know, I'm not as high as it on Nets. Daly was, apparently. But in saying that, I think the picks and the pick protections, and, you know, if it's a 2024 pick, a 26 pick, a 28 pick, when, you know, Durant, Irving, their deals are done and they're, you know, in their mid to late 30s, and the Brooklyn Nets will be a lot worse. I don't think that the Nets are going to be willing to do that, because right now the ball is in, the favor is on to the opposing teams, to Boston, to Miami, to Philly, to Brooklyn. James Harden has made it clear that he wants out. He's throwing basketballs to teammates. He's going to strip clubs. He's doing what he's doing in a pandemic. That's probably the most disgusting thing about this whole thing, just the recklessness and derelict nature of his behavior. That, to me, just really pisses me off. But in saying that, the way the Brooklyn Nets are playing right now, and obviously, like Cam sort of said, it is preseason basketball, but there's an argument to be made that they don't really need him. You're not mortgaging your depth of what you've already got with your third, fourth, and fifth best players. And, you know, they have a rotation that's 10, 11 deep. And the Boston Celtics, you know, are you really going to give up a guy like Jaylen Brown, who is, you know, a future, you know, Paul George-esque wing alongside Jason Tatum? Maybe might be the most lethal wing duo going forward. I hope no Nets listeners.
Can you, Jack, can you say that again?
Look, I hope that no Brooklyn Nets listeners are hearing me give credit to the Boston Celtics. But when I'm talking to you guys, it's very easier than talking to some other Celtics fans. So look, I just think that it's the Boston Celtics and Brooklyn Nets, Philadelphia 76ers. It doesn't make sense for them to do the deal, because right now Harden is tanking his own value and it's working in the opposing team's favor.
Yeah, I just, for the Celtics, I see almost no scenario where this works from a fit standpoint either. You know, Kemba Walker has had some issues. His knee is definitely an uncertain thing and something to watch going forward. That being said, any deal for Harden is certainly going to have to include Brown, at which point you're going to have 2 years to win the title with basically Jason Tatum and James Harden. And that's about it. He's not going to stay in Boston. He's not going to resign. He's made that pretty clear. And I think it's just too risky, and it's just kind of too weird of a basketball fit for the Celtics.
From everything that I understand when it comes to the Rockets and James Harden, I'm talking not just the team, I'm talking the coverage, the fan base, and all that stuff. They all, up until now, they love James Harden. You bring James Harden to either New York or you bring him to Boston, he is going to get torn apart. There's no shot in hell that I would want to see him on either team for either of their sakes. No way. It's just, they're asking for a mess. Now, if you're going out into the Nets, how are you going to stop them offensively, assuming that Kyrie's going to stay there? You're not. But they will implode. Like, look, I'll give Kyrie all the credit in the world, right? He wasn't talking to us, and then he came on, a couple weeks ago, and was – I've never seen him so pleasant in my life. And then he came on again, same exact thing. He was great. But we know that he can go in the other direction very quickly. You have that issue, and then you have James Harden, who I think is as big a diva as it gets in this league. I'm sorry, I don't care how much buddies they are. Like, you can't just have – like, you guys know, Celtics fans know, you can't just have a ton of talent and stick it all together and guarantee it's going to work. It can easily go in the wrong direction if you don't have the right chemistry. So, for the Nets, I do not want to see that. I mean, look, Caris LeVert doesn't get his due outside of Brooklyn, honestly. Like, him in the Manu Ginobili role, Kevin McHale role, whatever, super six man – I love that. I thought Dinwiddie would have been good there, but I think Caris LeVert's way better suited for that. So as much as the third star stuff still pops up, I don't know about you, Jack, but I'm so against getting rid of Caris as your third guy.
Absolutely. I think it just makes so much sense in terms of just balance, team cohesion. Everyone seems to be buying into their roles. You've spoken to them, Nick. You've heard everyone sort of being like, yeah, I'm doing whatever the team wants. Yeah, Spencer Dinwiddie's going to be the Draymond Green of the Brooklyn Nets. Caris LeVert's going to be Manu Ginobili. Kyrie and KD, you know, while they might be temperamental and have their personality issues, but both of them have been awesome of late with the media, with the likes of you and Matt Brooks and the rest of the Nets media. I just think that they're just ready because they're much more pleasant because they're getting to play basketball now and they're not having to worry about all this external sort of BS stuff that, you know, isn't necessarily their cup of tea. But at the end of the day, James Harden, I would be surprised if he's still on the Houston Rockets by March trade deadline, whenever the heck the date is. But what team? It's probably Philly, but that's only because, you know, Daryl Morey tweeted out like a memory, you know, like what was it, yesterday or whatever, they had to delete it. And it's just like, my God, please, you know how, like, you've gotten in trouble with Twitter before. You should have probably gotten in trouble for it, but seriously, just Twitter fingers. Stop, my dude.
Send him to Charlotte so he can go hang out with LeVar Ball.
Wow.
That'd be nice. I like that.
Great team. I like that.
Them and then have, yeah, MJ there. That just sounds like the perfect reality TV show in the making right there.
I was just going to wrap this up by saying, you know, I think the Celtics should definitely be looking to acquire stars in the future. They need to maintain flexibility throughout Tatum's prime, kind of on his max deal. But I don't necessarily think that James Harden should be the target right now.
Yeah, every star that comes along should not just be mercilessly pursued by, you know, any team. It really, like, people have kind of taken this whole Morey Ball kind of approach just to get the talent and figure it out thing a little too far, I think. We've seen a lot of high-profile meltdowns recently because of it. So this brings me to another potential high-profile meltdown, depending on how it pans out. And I want to get your guys' assessment on just where you are at with Kemba Walker's knee situation. I mean, having been a UConn guy since I was a little kid, I've followed him all the way through his career. I've seen him go through these cycles, and they have happened before, but they have also never been this bad. So what do we think?
So just for clarity's sake, did this really all start because he played too many minutes at the All-Star game?
No.
Since then? Okay.
I mean, there was a problem before that, but if Celtics fans don't hate Mike Budenholzer right now, I don't know what you guys are smoking, because, like, you should absolutely hate him.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't Mike Budenholzer. Wasn't the coach at the All-Star game Nick Nurse?
I keep screwing it up, honestly. It's one or the other.
Nick Nurse infuriates me for all sorts of reasons. But
Nick Nurse is super cool. What are you talking about?
No. The Eastern Conference semifinals was a nightmare. I hated watching Nick Nurse whine to the refs for 7 games. Not yeah, into
true.
It.
Yeah, he plays guitar. You love that. So, Justin, thank you for putting it in temporal perspective. Kemba's a little man with little knees that get banged up. I mean, he's going to need to rest up and take a while. He is going to lose a little bit of his pop, which is to the detriment of his pick and roll game, which is a huge part of his game. But increasingly, we want Jason Tatum to take the keys to the car, right? So there is, as Alex pointed out, you know, this team is now all about Jason Tatum. And you win in the NBA by having the best, one of the 5, 6, 7 best players in the world do their thing. So if the Celtics' future was predicated on Kemba Walker being the guy, that was already a problem. If he can continue to shoot from three well, if he can distribute well, and you can't hunt him too bad on defense, which was a huge problem for the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, then that's okay. And to that end, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Jeff Teague and Fast PP can hold down the fort. please don't let Marcus Smart be a point guard. He is too sure-headed to make point guard play happen consistently. But this is another one where I know that that's not the frame of this podcast, but ask me again in February where I'm at, because I'm not too worried yet.
Yeah, I think that's the approach that the Celtics are kind of taking as well with regard to Kemba Walker. I don't think they're going to be going all out at the start of the regular season. I think they're going to be trying out lineups, seeing what works. I think they're gunning to go into the playoffs with a healthy Kemba Walker, and that matters a lot more. And, you know, to that end, Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum in the bubble were a lethal lineup, despite Miami being able to hunt Kemba on defense by the end. That lineup did really, really well with basically anybody else plugged in there. Those four guys together work well as teammates. There's a lot of shooting on the floor. And, you know, with Marcus, Jaylen, and Jason antagonizing opposing wings, there's a lot you can do with that team. If Kemba's knee continues to be as bad as it has been, then you probably have to start looking at what the long-term plan is. But for right now, I think the right approach is definitely to just keep him on ice for as long as he needs, bring him back when you're ready to try and make some noise in the postseason.
So it was Nick Nurse, by the way, that was the coach. So I continue to get that wrong, no matter what show I'm on, I apologize. But more importantly, with Kemba Walker, look, the thing is that you should slow play it within this year, because I just don't think the Celtics are going to win it this year. I mean, I think right now it's what I hate, that like how the NBA can be like this, but I look at it and I see four teams right at the front right now. It's the Nets, it's the Bucks, Lakers, Clippers. And last year, I thought the Celtics were legitimate title contenders. Obviously, they got close and then choked in the end. But with what's going on with Kemba, guys, like at the beginning of the season of last year, he's never been this great defender, but he was not the liability that he became. Like, he could still take charges. He was doing pretty well with that, actually. Yeah. Like, I think him and Smart were what, like the best 1-2 combo in the league. I think I could be totally wrong on that, but he was doing well in that department. You lose that whole side of him now with his knee. I get it. Jaylen and Tatum are the future, but you can't have this guy be not what he was on offense and then also be even more inept on defense, like, and have him be your third best player. Like, how do you play him to close out games? Like, that's going to take a lot of really, really impressive chess work by Brad Stevens for the future if you're going to do that.
Yeah, I would hate to have a point guard with a history of knee injuries on my team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, look, I think to put it plainly and simply, for all teams, including the Boston Celtics, including the Brooklyn Nets, health is going to be a determining factor to their success. It's as simple as that. If the Boston Celtics have Kemba Walker fit and healthy come, you know, January, February, whatever, and that health maintains, then they are going to be a championship contender. If Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving maintain health, and at least in the pointy part of the season, they're going to be load managed. We've heard that from Steve Nash. Nick has heard it. Everyone else here has heard it. It's reductive to sort of say, and it's simplistic to sort of put it that way, but with the help, whichever team is healthiest out of these two is going to have more success, because both of them have a great collection of elite talent. You know, KD and Kyrie at their peak might be better than Tatum and Kemba and Brown, but that collective three/four with Marcus Smart in there, both of these teams have elite talent, and health is just going to be so damn important. And there are going to be issues. I'm not confident in Kyrie Irving's health, you know, despite the fact that, you know, I'm supposed to be the homer here. The dude doesn't play the regular season. He's going to play 50, 55 games this season. But if he's playing, you know, 16 games and 38 minutes in the playoffs, I couldn't give a shit.
Well, the other thing that comes down to, guys, too, is like we're talking about the knee problems with the point guards. Of course, Kyrie has knee problems. And if you take Kevin Durant out of the Nets lineup, we know what they're going to be with Kyrie as their best player. They're going to be a fringe. They're going to be like at the bottom of the barrel playoff team. But my point is, like, the thing is, we're talking about the point guards. Like, if we want to evaluate the whole team, so it's Tatum versus Kevin Durant, and who's going to win that battle? Like, every time, like, you could flip flop the point guards, and I'm still going to take the Nets in that one because you have Kevin Durant. Like, it's not about a Kemba thing. Like, it's just you need him to be better than Kyrie, and for him to be better than Kyrie because of where Tatum is on the scale, like, he needs to be He needs to look like he was pre-All-Star game, and that comes down to his health more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the Celtics are really hoping for is for Brown and Tatum to improve upon last year and not necessarily take radical leaps, but they were both already on an up and up. I think what inspires hope for Tatum and Brown is that they play on both ends of the court 100%. And Irving, it's just a fair knock that sometimes that's not true. And
sometimes, how about most of the time that's not true? Let's be honest here. You don't need to be nice. Well, Jack and I aren't going to be offended. Come on.
And then that's the thing is, I mean, I can't think of any basketball fan who isn't rooting for Kevin Durant to be 100% healthy, because the league is just a better place when the best players are balling out. So much to my chagrin, I think, Nick, you're right that if Durant is at full tilt or even 90% of the player he was pre-injury, that's a huge problem for the Eastern Conference, not just the Celtics.
I mean, you guys got a taste of him in the preseason. He looks pretty
good.
Yeah.
True, but you also have to consider that Jason Tatum is rocking long curls, which is a typical killer for him, averaging significantly less points. And when he shaves his head, he goes back to being a third team, borderline second team All-NBA guy. So,
and Deuce is probably going to be able to talk soon, right? So he's going to be able to give him pep talks. That'll help.
Oh, my God, I haven't even thought about that. I don't even know what he sounds like.
Yeah, none of us do, right? It's going to be mind-blowing.
So there's another big elephant in the room in terms of how one of these teams may end up performing this season. And it might not be anything, depending on how we feel about it. And that is Kyrie being weird. Take your
bit.
Like, how are you feeling on Kyrie finishing the season without creating another brouhaha, either internally within the team or externally, as usually seems to be the case?
To be honest, I don't think it's going to be an issue with the Brooklyn Nets. I understand why it happened in the Boston Celtics locker room, given the time that a lot of those players were in their career, the personality sort of meshed. But we did also see a pretty sort of harmonious reunion, a lot of hugs and stuff. I think a lot of it does get blown up. And I think that personality stuff, locker room stuff, I think it's going to be more of an issue when it comes to the Los Angeles Clippers, because it clearly had an effect on their on-court product. I don't think it's going to affect the Brooklyn Nets on-court product. And I think the likes of the sort of secondary sort of players and stars, Jared Allen, his sort of personality type, Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, these sort of dudes are like, we know our roles. These guys are the superstars. And they've said, and Nick's heard probably a million comments about it, that we want to make these guys better. Our job is to make them better, because that's going to create winning basketball and championship habits. So I think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup. But I wouldn't look, there's going to be a point in time where Kyrie says something, or Jared Weiss of The Athletic finds out something, or Rachel Nichols finds out something. But I don't think it's going to affect the Brooklyn Nets, because I also think Steve Nash at the helm, in terms of his emotional intelligence and his ability to just know how people work. And, you know, when he's asked about Kyrie Irving, he's gassing him up. He's gassing up all the guys. I just think that the collaboration and the nature of the locker room and the whole roster in general, I think it's not going to be a big effect for the Brooklyn Nets as it was for the Boston Celtics.
Storm in a teacup, I have never heard before, but I really like that, Jack. So I may start using that. But with the Celtics situation, Kyrie was supposed to be the alpha dog there, right? And I think we've all seen the phrase Batman and Robin gets overused so much, but we've seen, like, Kyrie cannot be that number one guy. He can take the last shot at the end of the game for sure, but he's not going to be the guy who leads you to the promised land at the end, and Kevin Durant is. And when you hear, like, you just go listen to Kyrie Irving's appearance on Kevin Durant's podcast. Forget, like, I get that he said a lot of controversial stuff, but listen how he talks to KD. As much as he thinks he can hang with KD, he has this unbelievable respect for this guy because he's been around longer. He's won before. Kyrie is so much about, you have to have done something before for me to respect you and for me to welcome you in. I don't necessarily like that mentality, but that's how he is. So when you have Steve Nash, who is obviously an accomplished point guard and everything, like the Hall of Famer and whatnot, he hasn't won anything before, but he was so impressive, and he has Kevin Durant's respect, then Kyrie, like, right there, I think you're kind of all set. Then you have Dinwiddie, who has the right mentality, cares for, like you said, Jack, all these other guys who have the right mentality. And I know, like, I don't think DeAndre Jordan should be starting over Jared Allen, but I also think that DeAndre Jordan, in terms of a chemistry perspective, is as important as it gets on that team because he keeps things loose all the time. Every time he's on, he's always joking around and everything like that with us. I think he is a very he may not get the love like from a national perspective, but on the local side, like you'll see, like he's just he keeps those guys loose. And as much as like Durant, as he's not always been my cup of tea, just a me thing, not a him thing at all. I guarantee that. But he's like. He can handle Kyrie. Like, he just doesn't get fazed by it. And that is so important, I think, in all this, too. It's the most important thing.
Nick, I think you're so right. I think Durant and DeAndre, they're both cool as a cucumber in the face of Kyrie. I love to, you know, pick fun of Kyrie now and again, but often he's right vis-a-vis the media. And, man, I hate the New York media, so it's going to be a war of the words, but... it'll be hot air all the way through. And I think we buried the lead, which is Spencer Dinwiddie is definitely the weirdest dude on the Nets. And so Kyrie suddenly is like Bitcoin one of the four normal guys on the roster. So I think there will be many storylines, none of which particularly matter. I think LeVert and Dinwiddie and others not getting enough touches could be something real. I think that's a real storyline to look after. Some jackass from the New York Post making fun of Kyrie's pregame outfit is not an actual story, although we'll have to probably pod about it sometime soon.
Yeah. I will as well.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, with the Kyrie thing, so this story is getting, frankly, not that interesting to me. You know, the media is going to do their thing with Kyrie. They're going to just keep, like, asking him weird questions all the time to try and provoke a reaction out of him. Maybe they'll get it, maybe they won't. But ultimately, you know, when I think about what Steve Nash is doing on the Brooklyn Nets, what his primary responsibility is, I don't necessarily think he's there to draw up a perfect play at the end of a game. Steve Nash is there to be the vibe coach. He's there to just hang out and chill with the boys, make sure everybody's feeling good going into the games. I think that's his primary responsibility. As long as he does that, as long as he and KD and Kyrie are on the same page, I really don't think this is going to be that big of a deal. You know, and just to kind of put a bow on it, with Kyrie's tenure in Boston, on the one hand, it was definitely frustrating as a Celtics fan to see the commercial and the "if you'll have me, I plan on resigning here" thing. That was a bummer. At the same time, there were more issues with that team than just Kyrie Irving. Marcus Morris was taking the ball out of Jason Tatum's hands in critical possessions. Terry Rozier was in a contract year. We ran into a very good Bucks team and Giannis tore our front line apart. Al Horford was getting older. Like, there was more going on with that team than just kind of, oh, Kyrie Irving's free agency is a big problem. So this is getting to the point of non-story for me with this stuff.
The more I hear about, the more I see, particularly with that, you know, quote unquote love fest we saw between the Celtics players and Kyrie, the more I'm starting to think that it was Mook and Terry that were the main problems that season, though we may never actually know. If they do ever make the 30 for 30 for that, I am definitely glued to the TV. That said, we had another high profile departure with the Celtics in the offseason. I'd like to get some external viewpoints from you Nets people on how you feel about Gordon Hayward leaving for the Hornets and how it's going to impact the Celtics.
I don't know how you don't look at what Gordon Hayward decided to do and think that he's soft after this. I'm sorry. Like, come on, you're going to go and leave if Gordon Hayward's still there right now, everything I've said about like the Celtics taking a step back and being in trouble because of Kemba, I wouldn't be saying that. As much as Hayward, like, he's run into a ton of bad luck and he's never really reached like the Utah Jazz here, which I know is like such an overused thing in Boston now, but he never quite got there. I get it. He ran into a lot of trouble, but now you leave to go. I don't care that you thought about playing in Charlotte before. How the hell do you look at that as a better situation other than the money? And you're still going to get, what was it? Like, it was at least 100, right, mil that he was getting offered by the Celtics. You're a title contender. How do you leave for that? Don't you play to win? Are you there just to go, you want to go hang out with LeVar and MJ? Is that what it is now? It just looks so bad to me.
I mean, Gordon Hayward saw the dollar signs on that offer and said, oh, yeah, no, this is actually fine. I mean, and that's really what it comes down to with this whole story. Like, Gordon Hayward was certainly a very good player for the Boston Celtics last year when he was healthy. Ultimately, we made the Eastern Conference Finals largely without him in the playoffs. It is not a death sentence to lose Gordon Hayward for this team. And it's certainly not a death sentence to be paying Gordon Hayward $120 million guaranteed. That contract, I am very concerned about the future of the Charlotte Hornets. Let's put it that way.
What's going to change?
I think it sucks to lose anytime. It sucks to lose a good player off of your team. I think that the Celtics will still be in a relatively good position going forward as long as they just have Tatum and Brown together. But I certainly don't want to be paying that contract for the next 4 years.
No, the contract is absolutely disgusting. It's Batum 2.0. But in saying that, in terms of if Gordon Hayward were to still be on this Boston Celtics team, I'd be more confident in their championship aspirations. But you know, you have to take all those factors into account. And you know, maybe Robin didn't want to, his wife didn't want to stay there because apparently she only liked the cops and the donuts or whatever the hell it was. But in saying that, I just think that it takes away a key rotation piece, just purely basketball-wise. And we chatted a little bit earlier about, you know, the Boston Celtics' lack of depth. Gordon Hayward is a perfectly malleable piece and perfect sort of like star role player, if that makes any sense. He does so much good in terms of like playmaking, decent enough defender, creates his own shot, can shoot from the perimeter. The Charlotte Hornets obviously are going to get a very good player, but I think his talents are much better served for a Boston Celtics team. I think that if he was on this team, you know, going into this season, I might have the Boston Celtics fighting it out with the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, as the sort of Eastern Conference favorite, you know, Brooklyn Nets, whatever else. But now they're sort of on the fringes. So I think it's a pronounced loss in terms of just the ability and talent that he did give to the Boston Celtics. But at the end of the day, you're not giving him that money. And Alex is completely right about that.
So let's do just a quick hit on each other's, the rest of the offseason. So starting with the Nets, talk about the draft. It doesn't seem like you guys did too much with the draft, but you did hang on to Reggie Perry. What do we need to know about Reggie Perry?
Do you want me to jump in, Nick? I think he might be the rookie of the year. No, look, I'm all in the Reggie Perry hype train because I think it's another sort of second round pick draft steal that Sean Marks got. You know, he's had a decent history with that, getting Rodion Skuritz, you know, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert are late first rounders. He's a good drafter and he knows how to get rotation players. And, you know, his contract was converted to a two-way. So I think he's going to contribute because I don't expect DeAndre Jordan to play, you know, the full 72 games. You know, Claxton's still injured. Jared Allen, you know, if he twists an ankle, God forbid, or has some sort of other injury. You know, Reggie Perry's preseason as well, he provides a point of difference. I said this in the Brooklyn Buzz. You know, he provides a level of physicality and toughness for a rookie that he looks ready-made to just play NBA basketball. You know, that game against the Washington Wizards, a lot of good signs there. I think in the draft as well, obviously they didn't use that number 19 pick and I was dying for Josh Green or Sadiq Bey. But what they did do in terms of converting into a Landry Shamet and also getting Bruce Brown for Jalen Musa, who isn't even on the Detroit Pistons anymore, those are two rotation players that can play key minutes, you know, come playoff time. Now, Bruce Brown obviously hasn't had the best preseason. I think there are some stuff behind the scenes in terms of, you know, his conditioning and his desire. But I think he's going to contribute in a sort of David Nwaba fashion going forward. And Landry Shamet, you put him out there with Joe Harris, the goddamn that space is going to be freaking insane. And look, he's loving it. And I think that the Nets did some good things at the draft, even though they'd only necessarily used that like 57 pick, I think it was, on Reggie Perry.
Yeah, I think Perry's a solid add. And it sounds like the veteran guys are pretty high on him. I know Jeff Green's spoken highly of him, and so is DeAndre Jordan. Like there's potential there, and he has a shot, unlike the other two like actual bigs that they have there. So I think he could be helpful down the line. And the big thing is too, and you kind of hit on it, Jack, like this Marks is a good drafter, but they're also good at developing players that just kind of come off the scrap. But not saying that Perry's necessarily in that camp, but I mean, he's still 57th overall pick, kind of does fall into that category, even if he's better than that, however you want to look at it. So like, look at what happened with TLC. Joe Harris is a prime example of that too, didn't we? The list with that one can go on. I do wonder with, you know, Atkinson gone and certain other people, you know, Sean Fine leaving as well. Like there's different pieces leaving in the developmental side. Adam Harrington's still there, so that's important. But I wonder like how that will translate. But I think he's a solid pick. And I never thought they were going to use that 19 pick, Jack. I mean, I just like they were definitely, we knew they were trying to get a piece because that 19th pick is a guy who can play for a certain team, but not for the Nets.
Yeah, true.
On the other side, how are we feeling after some preseason action about Aaron Nesmith, Peyton Pritchard, and I guess we haven't really seen him in preseason, but we at least have seen some film of Yam Madar over in the Israeli Premier League?
So Peyton Pritchard is going to endear himself to Boston fans very quickly. He, in fact, already has. I think this dude is going to get a lot of run really early on, and there are going to be times when it's not going to look very good. That being said, I fully expect Peyton Pritchard to have a random 21-point game off the bench in the middle of February that will immediately win his respect and loyalty from the Celtics fans going forward. I think he actually brings some interesting skills to the table as a secondary ball handler and shooter. He is not very fast and not very athletic, but he seems like he's got some stones, and he and Marcus Smart are going to really enjoy playing together. Aaron Nesmith, I actually liked what I saw in limited minutes. You know, he kind of, he seemed a little more physical to me than I expected going forward. I think that his defense is definitely going to take a minute, and Brad typically doesn't play dudes who can't contribute on the defensive end right away. That being said, in a couple of years, I think there's definitely some flashes that are encouraging there.
Yeah. Fast PP is definitely going to get punched in the face pretty soon, because that dude plays really hard and in your face, and he is as annoying as Grayson Allen, but aspires to be as tough as Marcus Smart, which is pretty cool, but he's definitely going to get the rookie treatment from opposing teams. Alex is right. Nesmith's defense, I don't know, I wasn't super inspired, but it seems like he can shoot, which is something the Celtics could use. So I don't know. I really think that if I was on the sidelines of an NBA team, I would, especially one that looks like punching your ticket to the postseason will come easily enough. I think Alex and I are in agreement, and I don't know, Jack and Nick, what you think. There's not going to be fans at any playoff game this year, so home court advantage doesn't matter. I wouldn't be surprised if they go to a bubble again, at least for the conference finals and finals, like baseball did, maybe. So I would really be careful with overplaying players, making sure that if they catch COVID, God forbid, they have a long leash for coming back. So I think, again, the Celtics have 8 really young players that, all things being equal, you wouldn't want to showcase. But there's a weird opportunity here for taking it slow, really giving your players the opportunity to be emotionally and physically safe this season. And to that end, we might see more of the rookies than I otherwise would expect, given some of their defensive lapses.
One thing on Nesmith, I understand his defense is a problem right now, but they need to figure out a way to get him on the floor more. That kid can absolutely friggin' shoot. First preseason game when he wasn't playing against the Sixers, Brad put him in like the garbage time minutes. Like, this is, you haven't had a friggin' shooter in how long, and now you're just not going to play him? Or give Shemi the minutes, because Shemi's been great. I'm the biggest Shemi defender that there is. And I swear to God, I don't want to see him play another minute of basketball. It's killing me.
Oh, man. I do not think Semi Ojeleye is going to be playing too much. I really hope to God he's not. I am fully on board the start Grant Williams agenda, and have, this is my official stance for a year and a half now. And I think he needs to take all of Semi's minutes. So
sure. I can get behind that.
So kind of expanding beyond that, what are some of the team's biggest, you know, strengths, weaknesses, needs, risks, secret weapons with the Nets? Like, what do we need to know about this roster that isn't necessarily evident to a casual reader or listener?
I think right now that they honestly have a pretty balanced team. I know everybody wants them to get a third star, but I mean, if Caris LeVert's going to go on, and I think he can be that spark off the bench. I mean, and you hear Kevin Durant talk about it too, where he says how he could be the ball handler while Durant and Kyrie are still on the floor. If he's going to go and do that, we've seen that he can facilitate too. He did it in the bubble. I mean, he's like a really well-kept secret. And I think now where he can take on, if he can stay healthy, he's got that issue too, just like Kyrie does, Kyrie has. But you have that. And then Dinwiddie, like, I get it. Yeah, you might think, oh, he wants to get his offense, but he has consistently said since the day that Kyrie and KD came to Brooklyn, I'll do whatever I have to do to win. That's all I care about is winning. And he showed that, like, in the first game. Is he going to have some nights where he doesn't do a whole heck of a lot? Sure. But you have so much depth here. When you look at the bench, It's what? It's Dinwiddie. No, sorry. He's starting. It's Caris LeVert. It's Jared Allen. And like Landry Schmidt and Torian Prince coming off your bench right now. Those are your four guys. And three of them were in your starting lineup last year. I know ideally you don't want them in your starting lineup, but like those are four pretty solid guys to have off your bench. And one of them's a legit scorer on score. And then Prince, when he's not asked to do as much, he's a good three-point shooter. Not as good as Schmidt, but he's serviceable.
Yeah, I think depth, you know, Nick sort of alluded to it. I alluded to it at the start that depth is a massive strength of theirs. And, you know, I think the addition of Jeff Green as well is going to be a sneaky little nice pick where they can sort of unlock some defensive and offensive lineups. You know, if KD maintains the defensive IQ and intensity that he's shown in this preseason, then he's going to be an awesome defender. And it allows the Nets to just do some things and just throw different looks in a way that sort of Nick Nurse does and Eric Spoelstra does. The better teams do on the defensive end. So I think depth is a real key of theirs. And look, to be, again, reductive and simplistic, Kevin Durant. It's as simple as that. If Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant, then the Brooklyn Nets might be the championship favorite. But there is a big, big question mark about that, similar to, like, you know, Kemba Walker's health and such. So, look, it's all positive things at this point in time, but it's always easy to be positive in the preseason. Is this going to be the same mentality and same sort of mindset that Nick and I and other Nets fans have, you know, come February, March and the doldrums of the season? God, I'm hoping so. But I think that also the mentality of the squad, and Nick probably heard this today, it's like, you know, it's a one day at a time mentality, one game at a time. Let's enjoy the grind. Let's enjoy the journey. So, look, it's a lot of positive stuff. And I think that the coaching staff, you know, obviously you take it with a grain of salt, like sort of Cam was alluding to earlier. But you have assistant coaches in Ime Udoka, Jacques Vaughn, and Mike D'Antoni. Those three are head coach caliber in terms of assistant coaches. So I think that the depth and expertise from top down, Sean Marks down to Chris Chioggia at the bottom of the roster, there's just a heap of balance and a heap of cohesion that probably we haven't been able to say about many other teams.
What about the Celtics?
I think one thing that if the Celtics can get everybody healthy and on the floor, this team can really look forward to is how good this defense can be when everybody is healthy and able to play. I think Tristan Thompson was actually a fairly strong acquisition in the offseason, especially for that price point. And I think there's going to be some nights where Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Grant Williams, and Tristan Thompson make life very, very difficult for opposing teams. So at its peak, I think this team can be really dangerous and potentially finals worthy if everything breaks the right way. But I do think the beginning of the season is going to tell us a lot about this squad. There are going to be some pretty rough nights early on where we are playing a lot of young dudes, a lot of unproven dudes, and we're not going to be completely healthy. And ultimately, you know, in the Nets overview, I think the thing that we heard is this season comes down for Brooklyn to whether Kevin Durant is going to be on the floor. For the Celtics, I think you can similarly focus in on Jason Tatum. The Celtics are going to go as far as Jason Tatum can take them this year. If he's going to be a borderline MVP candidate, as some teams are, as some analysts are projecting, then the Celtics have a real shot to be a threat in the Eastern Conference. If he's not at that level, then they're probably going to be a playoff team, a fun playoff team that doesn't go very far.
Yeah, I Jack, I know, has to leave in the next few minutes, so I'm going to throw like huge shade here, and then he'll have to leave and not be able to defend it. one thing that I really love about the Celtics that Alex has just talked about is that they play really hard on both sides of the ball. And last year's playoffs really shined a light on not just the importance of defense, but the importance of composure. And that's something the Celtics really lacked. And hopefully another year at the bat will help them with that. I think whether it's the Bucks or even the Raptors and the Heat, there are some really stingy, tough teams in the Eastern Conference. And as history has shown, it doesn't matter if you're setting the world on fire on offense, you need to be able to settle in and play defense in the postseason. Just go ask the Blazers, go ask the Rockets how not being able to play defense in the playoffs has gone for them. And so maybe the Brooklyn Nets are just a glorified version of the Washington Wizards, but the Boston Celtics can play ball and both ends. And I think that that's really awesome for the C's down the stretch. I think, Alex, I disagree. I don't really care how the beginning of the season shakes out because Kemba Walker's knees and young players. And I mean, Deuce Tatum's probably going to talk this season. That's a crazy thing to say. And it might literally inspire Jason Tatum to play better basketball. It seems like being a dad is a huge part of his identity in this world.
And we know how that works for Van Vliet. I mean, he turned into God level point guard.
Yeah, right. I wish that Jason Tatum was as good as Fred Van Vliet. You're right. So I think the Celtics will finish like sixth or something. I think they have a lot of things to work through and a lot of unproven players, but they have the chops to compete on both sides. So I'm not super worried about them when push comes to shove.
I feel like that's a good place to leave it. Let's let everyone know where to find whatever we're working on.
I'm Jack Manuel, for those playing along at home, at the JMNJBT on Twitter, co-host of a lot of podcasts. Just check out the OTG Network, JBT, Brooklyn Buzz. I'm on the outlet. I love being on Celtics Lab. I'd love to be back because three Celtics fans that I kind of like interacting with. Who would have thunk it?
You can find me on Twitter at @Nick_Fryer and read all the Nets stuff that I write at Nets Wire, sister site of Celtics Wire, of course, at USA Today.
I'm Alex from OTG along with Jack and Cam. And I'm going to be working on a piece for them coming up about some of the best lineups for each team in the NBA. I think it's going to be a really fun and interesting piece. So that should be coming up in the next couple of days. And otherwise, you can just find me here on C-Lab.
Yeah, I just like, I hang out under the stairs and stuff. I'm around, you know, you'll find me. I'll just pop up, you know. But happy to be here as always. Wishing anyone celebrating a Merry Christmas and everyone else a happy and safe New Year.
Of course, as usual, you can find my stuff on Celtics Wire as usual. And if you want to hear more from us, you can find the pod on most podcatcher apps. Please subscribe. You won't miss an episode if you do. And if you like what you hear, you know, 5 stars, that kind of a thing. If you don't like something, light it on fire, and then film it, and then circulate it on Twitter. No, that's don't do that. Do not do that. Just let us know with a comment on Twitter or the hashtag CLPOD. We're always trying to bring you the deepest dives into Celtics coverage, and you know today Nets coverage. Hopefully, we did that.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now. Save big money.